Okay, looks like we're live. Let me just crack my elbows. No, didn't work. Knuckles. Okay, good enough. Let me just make sure that we are, in fact, live. I still see people waiting. Hold on. Waiting for Viva. No, that's not possible. Am I live? We're live. You guys see me, right? Give a little Y in the comment section in the chat. All right, people. So let's see here. Going to close this down. Going to go back, see if I see my... Okay, here we go. I see myself. Okay, good. How's everybody doing? I'm reading the chat. It's an emotional and it's an intense chat. I mean, it's the chats have been getting... As we evolve in this year, which has been an unpleasant year, to put it mildly, the chat has gotten... Well, first of all, the crowd has gotten bigger. The chat has gotten more intense. Yesterday, you're going to hear some noise upstairs. Nothing I can do about that now. We are all in lockdown in Quebec. And I think at some point during this stream, you're going to hear the world in which we live. Police sirens going up the streets, letting us know it's about time to get into curfew. And then I think my phone is going to get the emergency signal that we're in lockdown from 8 to 5 in the morning. It's been an unpleasant year, to put it mildly. And the events seem to only be getting more and more unpleasant. Globally, this is going to be a little nostalgia retrospect. When I started doing the vlogs, it was a weird thing. I just wanted to understand things. I wanted to understand what was going on in the States. I wanted to understand what was going on in the world. And people sort of wanted to understand as well. And I thought I was adding that value. And then, you know, certain tangents occurred or certain storylines or certain series occurred within that 2 years that we started following, the most recent of which and the most intense of which is now the U.S. elections. Because, you know, it started off, the impeachment was an interesting thing to follow. I mean, I realized I knew nothing of impeachment. I think now I understand it pretty well. Fairly proud to say that my predictions on the first impeachment were more accurate than others. Not naming any names. So the impeachment was interesting to follow. The Sandman lawsuit, Michael Flynn, Jussie Smollett, all of these things. They're very interesting to follow. This election lawsuit situation culminating in last week's events was also interesting to follow. And I understand, and like I when I say I understand, I genuinely appreciate people are impassioned, especially Americans. This is the, you know, this is your country, this is the future of your country. Whichever side you're on, you view it that way. I forgot some series I've been following in Canada, Justin Trudeau and the Wii scandal and the other scandals that seem to go nowhere, and we are where we are. This channel has always been a place of, I'd like to think, mutual respect. I think it is, and if it isn't, I may have failed. But this is supposed to be about respect and dialogue and understanding, and I understand it gets heated in the chat. Do me the respectful thing of trying to keep it, if not civil, remotely civil. Fight, call names, whatever. We're all adults, I think, as far as anybody knows. But don't cross certain lines in the chats. We've seen what's going on now, what people use as a pretext to sanction. That, and I also, this is a channel where we explain things, we go through things. I think without an angle, we know Robert Barnes politically. But we should all respect that. And, you know, yesterday I posted something on my community in YouTube saying, you know, the world is an unpleasant place at times and discouraging and suffocating and overwhelming. But I'm not the best at following my own advice as far as the serenity prayer goes. You know, Lord, give me the wisdom, the courage. Lord, give me the courage to change the things I can. Well, whatever. I, for God's sake, I messed it up. It's the serenity prayer. And to accept the wisdom to know the things that I can change. I'm not good at following that advice, but I'm decent. But I think at the end of the day, I've said it many times in all of my previous vlogs, hate is an all-consuming force for the person who feels it, whether they're justified or not. That's the other thing that people sometimes forget. Whether or not you are in fact justified in feeling hatred, it is nonetheless a consuming force. And so it's the toughest thing in the world to fight the urge to feel hatred, even when you might be justified in feeling it. The heck was I going on about? I've missed a bunch of super chats. Okay. Let me see here. Do you get the gut feeling you are watching and listening to history right now? I've got that feeling the entire year. We are living through history, and it's only getting more and more historic. I wish I can live long enough to see how it's going to go down and how it's going to be remembered and how it's going to be interpreted. Because when you're in the present, it doesn't give you the best. It doesn't give you the best appreciation of the present. I missed a lot of super chats, so let me just give the other standard intro. Thank you all for the super chats. 30% goes to YouTube, and I know people hate supporting YouTube. There are alternatives that are being built right now. I'm on Rumble. Rumble doesn't have live stream. I'm on Locals with Robert. Robert doesn't have live stream. Locals doesn't have live stream yet. It might be coming in the new year. So we're working on these other alternatives because YouTube and the big tech are, you know, they make things easy, but they also get to control things by doing it that way. Thank you for the super chat. If I miss them and you're going to get miffed, don't give the super chat. I don't like people feeling guilty. I don't like people feeling rooked. You know, it's your comment gets highlighted. You support me and you support Robert and you support this channel. And I appreciate it, but I can't get to all the super chats. And I won't, and I'll miss them. So that's it. Number one. Number two, civil discourse. Yeah, we already got that. And do your best, please. I know the chat has gotten so lively. I can't actually follow it, which is an amazing thing for anything to happen. What do we do if the live feed fails? Bannon's feed was ended. So is Tim's pool. No, look, I don't know. We'll pick it up somewhere else. I don't think we're going to have that problem because we talk law and, you know, without commenting on Bannon's, I know I've seen some things from Bannon's. I can understand. Tim Pool, he might just overwhelm the AI because he gets so many people listening to it that they cannot filter through the chat in any meaningful way. First time I've ever been able to watch live. Perk of being in the homeland again. Have some monies because you guys do an awesome job. Thank you very much. Will you represent us when the purges come to our door? That's another thing. We all do what we can to make the difference we think we can make. You have to do what you're good at. You have to do what you can, and you have to do what is productive to the ends that you want to achieve. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens in Canada. So look, with the big tech now, we are now seeing it. And even if some people like what they are seeing, they should appreciate the inherent risks of what they are seeing. Big tech controls way too much. They have way too much force. They have way too much power. They have more power than elected officials and the most powerful elected officials of the world. You think Trump deserves what he's getting? I can understand and respect that. If you think that it ends there, I would suggest anyone who believes that is being naive. Amazing that the breakdown of the polls breakdown in the polls, despite all time, is almost exactly like Russiagate. Almost no crossover either way. Okay, I'm not sure I understand that, but let's see this here. Frank says, thanks so much for breaking things down in a way non-lawyers can understand. Thank you, Frank. Okay, so what is on the menu for tonight? Let me see this. People that don't like you could make bad comments to take you down. No, well, and I, incidentally, we're going to have moderators of having mods now, so they're going to take down only the most egregious. It's just violent. Anybody who knows what they're putting up there might risk having the comment blocked. My only limit is overt violence. And we're going to talk about this with Robert because we did a piece last week on Linwood's tweets. And that was before the other tweets. And, you know, we discussed what is a threat. But when it comes to the chat, that's my only limit. And please respect it. Okay, now. Yelling. Yes, you can yell all you want. You can yell. It feels good to yell. It also feels good to cry. Okay, here's a super chat you can miss. Love your work. It's the world. In the words of Churchill, we have not reached the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. We have not reached the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. I like it. And Churchill had another one. When you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot and hang on. So, okay, on the menu tonight. All law, by the way. We're not talking theories. We're not talking conspiracy theories. We're not talking. I like to think it's not spin. There is interpretation that I know, you know, goes through our political filters or our internal biases. But this is law, and I see Robert in there, and he's getting ready. But this is law. Now we're going to talk about some good stuff, interesting stuff. A lot of people throwing around the Insurrection Act, accusations of sedition. The fallout from the riots and storming of Capitol Hill. What charges these individuals who breached and were parading around posting their evidence to social media, what charges they can face? What's next to some extent? But the most, I think the most interesting thing for me is the Sidney Powell Dominion lawsuit. Their suit, for anybody who doesn't know, Dominion has filed suit against Sidney Powell for $1.3 billion, setting aside the money, which is whatever. We've seen lawsuits now just reach exorbitant claims. The allegations in that lawsuit are damning if they can be proven. And allegations, I've said it time and time again, are only allegations. They are not fact. But if those allegations are remotely true, Houston, we have a problem. Dima N, thank you for making sense of this crazy world, especially from the legal perspective. Happy New Year's, guys. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much, Dima. I saw another one. And then I want to give you one other predecessor. Oh, I told you what's going to happen. We're going to see Quebec. You're going to witness what we're living through. It's what it is. Okay. With that said, there we go. I got the good crack that time. Robert's here. Let's bring him in. Robert is looking good, looking dapper. And you know, the only thing, Robert's optimism and Robert's cool mind actually rubs off on me, if only for the 2 hours of the stream. And then it's right back to OCD neuroses for the rest of the week. Robert, how you doing?
Good, good.
Okay, so you're back home, it looks like, by the backdrop?
Yeah, here in an undisclosed location. No, in Las Vegas.
Okay, so now, look, we've got to do the follow-up, because when we did the live stream last week, which was the day of the events, a lot, and I mentioned it many times in that stream, a lot of the information was not out yet. We've gotten now a week's worth of more news coming out, video stuff. We know of the police officers, the police officer who passed, the Ashley who got shot as well. Three other people who died from medical emergencies related to the events. People are now, there's discussion about second articles of impeachment coming as early as tomorrow. We'll see what those look like. I guess what are going to be the next steps? Let's just say starting from a potential impeachment. I mean, do you know, are there going to be articles, and what is your take on where they might go?
So the upholders of the Constitution in our Congress, as they told us on Wednesday, in their pompous, portentous actions, are now wanting to butcher it one more time by either originally trying to improperly and illicitly invoke the 25th Amendment. Many of these same lawyers who said, oh, no, you have to follow the constitutional protocols and Congress can't object to an election, are willing to immediately scrap and burn the Constitution the moment it serves their political interests just a few days later. So these people have exposed themselves as the frauds, fakes, and phonies that they are. To his credit, one person who has stayed consistent through all of this has been the man I will be debating on Tuesday. Professor Alan Dershowitz, where we will debate forced vaccinations and forced mask mandates. And does he really want to stick a mask on a 3-year-old autistic kid? So we'll see where the debate goes. But he himself said right away, first, the president did nothing illicit, nothing impeachable, and nothing criminal. Second, what happened at the Capitol was more like a riot and disorderly conduct and maybe trespass, but by no means was it a coup and by no means was it terroristic. And he said calling it terrorism does damage to the word terrorism and minimizes the real harm that true terrorists inflict. And then third, he pointed out that what Pelosi had been doing came close to invoking a military coup, asking military officers to not obey the elected president for the next 2 weeks. And what she and Schumer were doing in misusing and abusing the 25th Amendment and the impeachment clause was far closer to a coup, because it was a coup of our constitutional liberties. Professor Turley, another person who's on the left, been a strong critic of the president in a wide range of capacities. I disagree with him on some of the on the election issues, but he too said that there would be no greater damage done to the Constitution than the ones that Pelosi and Schumer are talking about and thinking about, and that they were far more dangerous than anything the people who raided and stormed the Capitol could propose. And so and now, we do stand at the verge. I believe this 2021 will be the greatest constitutional challenge and constitutional crisis of whether our constitutional republic survives that maybe it has ever had in its history, or at least since 1860.
And so just so everybody appreciates this, like there, I think most can agree protest is not just acceptable. It's a fundamental right. Riots, not so much. I think most can agree that what occurred on Capitol Hill would have been far more productive had it remained to a massive protest where, in, you know, singing the national anthem in unison with 500,000 people would have probably been much better than storming Capitol Hill, smashing windows, stealing the podium, and you know, putting people at risk to the point where someone got killed by the police. So I think everybody can pretty much agree that protest is good, riot is bad. And what we saw on Capitol Hill, certainly, I don't think anyone's going to deny that it escalated to a riot, what otherwise started as a protest. Trump, when he came out, I've been looking at it and watching it and trying to see what they were saying, because I hadn't the benefit of having not seen what Trump said before the media says how to interpret it. I got the impression that it was something of a different call. Not that it was, you know, there was a scheduled protest. They got the permits and he's speaking at the scheduled protest saying, you know, make your voices heard, to then now try to construe that as inciting, I don't know if the word was insurrection or a coup, and inciting violence and inciting a riot to the point where you are going to now try to impeach him in the last 2 weeks of office. I mean, where does it stop and what is the goal? I mean, is the goal to impeach him so that he can never run again in 2024? Or is it just to like, you know, for lack of a better analogy, is it just to let the loser know who really is in charge?
Well, it's what, you know, we've been talking about is that we're sort of in the middle or towards the end of the second act, not probably in the third act, despite what the gibberish that QAnon was promulgating, which I'll get into how QAnon is deliberately responsible for a lot of this, and not the gibberish that loon Lynn Wood was propagating, who's dangerous and people should quit listening to him. He's a nut job. If you want to watch the rambling of an insane man, go ahead, but don't be listening to anything he's saying, because he helped get that woman killed. And I hold him partially responsible. He's a lot more accountable than anyone else that is being blamed currently, in my view. But we'll get to that. But for those who are also feeling down or discouraged or depressed, you know, the all great hero stories require a tough second act. So that's the whole point. The odds look bad. I mean, at least I, as a young lawyer, I dreamed of being in the middle of, you know, sitting in a tavern listening to Thomas Paine's arguments in the 1700s, to being around for the constitutional ratification debates, for being there when Andrew Jackson took over in 1828, or for Abraham Lincoln end slavery in 1860, or for the civil. I mean, I wanted to be riding those freedom buses in 1963 and 1964 and saying hello to some Klansmen. So and, you know, maybe get knocked around a bit, hopefully living. Maybe not. We'll see. But there's, you know, as Medgar Evers says, most men die 1,000 deaths every day. He was only going to die once, and only once he did. And his legacy and his life lived on. My namesake, the great Reverend Robert Barnes, did not meet a happy ending in the Tower of London after he told the king he was not above God's law. But, you know, 6 centuries later, his namesake and descendant takes pride in the actions that he took, standing up for what he believed was right against all power that could be. So everybody that's ever wanted to be a hero, you need a villain. The odds need to be tough. The night needs to look dark for the light to have real meaning. What is faith without doubt, after all? So I see this as a great opportunity where the real resistance begins now, not the fake corporate sponsored Nike backed one of the last 4 years. So and it's going to be interesting. So to understand what's happening and what's going to happen, well, we're in the peak moment of the Empire Strikes Back, and they're going to strike back by every method, mechanism, and means they know to man. They will use the events of January 6th as a pretext to impose radical new Patriot Act laws. Who was the author of the first Patriot Act? Well, it was a certain senator from Delaware who tried to push it through in 1995 after Oklahoma City, who's now, come January 21st, going to be sitting in the White House. And they already have the 20,000-page bill ready to rock and roll to take away more rights and more liberties, and many of my friends on the left are cheering it, because that's how weak they are. People like Crystal Ball doesn't have a crystal ball as she celebrates some of this nonsense and calls for these precarious, perilous precedents to be set. And so one of them is attempting to impeach a president. Let's go one by one. First, the 25th Amendment. Even that they've backed off on. The 25th Amendment is solely intended for someone who is physically incapacitated from being president. that is clearly has no application to Trump. It is an extreme abuse of the Constitution to even suggest it. If you want to talk about seditious behavior, calling for the 25th Amendment is seditious behavior.
And if I may, we'll stop there. I know we mentioned it before. 25th Amendment came after JFK when it was unclear whether he was even, well, when it became clear. But in the event that the president is unable to fulfill the duties for, I think, no longer being alive is one of the reasons, and also some mental incapacity. So, I mean,
Further backstory. It's because they knew that Woodrow Wilson was mostly incapacitated the last 6 months of his term, and they hid that fact, and his wife really ran the country. So when it repopulated, they're like, geez, we probably should have a solution for this. And we should have a clear chain of command, because that was also during the peak of the Cold War. So, but it was totally incapacitated. It was not meant as a substitute for impeachment. It was not meant as anything else other than that. It's also not going to happen. So while there are many dubious people around Trump, Ben Carson isn't one of them, and they would require Ben Carson's consent as part of the cabinet to even have that considered. It's not going to happen, but it's sad that it was even thought about and considered. It shows how weak our Constitution is, that people in power are willing to ignore it readily while preaching in its defense on January 6th in a pretentious manner, and I would say false manner, or at least incorrect, that they would even think about it. The next step is, but the way the 25th Amendment happens is you have the vice president and a majority of the cabinet say that the president is in fact incapacitated, but then he can challenge that to Congress, and it takes an extended process for that to be resolved. So it was also kind of a nonsensical provision. Now, what Nancy Pelosi called for was effectively a military coup. She called the leaders of the military and asked them to not obey the elected president of the United States as to military matters. That's actual seditious behavior. That's actual coup. If now I don't agree with how sedition is defined criminally, but if it's defined the way Nancy Pelosi and others want to apply it to their critics, by golly, that is exactly it. And Nancy Pelosi would be 20 years in federal prison. So this is why they shouldn't be opening these doors.
I hear the discussion, and I've heard people make the exact same point. Now, because things have been so weaponized, and let's agree that there's a double standard. Is anyone seriously talking about holding Nancy Pelosi accountable under those accusations, or just a political pass?
A little bit, because both Turley and Dershowitz have said this is deeply problematic coup-like behavior. So when you have liberal law professors who actually do care about the rule of law saying that what you're doing is very dangerous, you should wake up and pay attention. The problem is, the reason why it's Empire Strikes Back mode is, when I was in D.C., what was clear is that was a scared town, no longer a power intoxicated town, but a scared town. And they used the pretext of what happened on January 6th to lash out, because as Michael Malice and others have pointed out, what happened at the Capitol was not so much an effective coup as it was a mockery of the elite. That they sat in our chair. They a guy with a buffalo outfit and a Vikings cap used the speaker, the great speaker's gavel. They're just in horror. They don't respect us, royalty. Who are these plebes? That's the real rage. Because, I mean, because I was going through and I was like, given the long history of occupying buildings, usually by left-leaning protesters, 2018, they occupied the Senate's chambers on behalf of Kavanaugh. 2017, it was either 2017 or 2018. It was 2018, early 2019. They occupied a bunch of chambers where AOC was cheering them on. And now she's saying that everybody who occupies a building must be, dealt with summarily. But she was on tape cheering them on for occupying even Pelosi's offices.
I'm all for, I don't have a double standard. I was all for, I'm not all for. I said that back then, these are illegal activities. It's protest. And part of the thing about protesting is you suffer the consequences. You get the charge, you plead to something, and you've protested, but you've been found guilty of some form of illegal activity in the protest. That's fine. It should be applied equally throughout. I think the people who did it way back when, taking over the police station, taking over the courthouses, and entering Capitol Hill, there should be charges. But what I'm seeing is it's not just a double standard. There's no standard at all. And that all that happens, and this time comes around, and you have Lindsey Graham the day after saying, we'll spare no expense. You know, we're having trouble getting $2,000 out to every American to subsidize for COVID shutdowns, but we'll have no expense will be spared in finding each and every one of these individuals and holding them to justice. So I think that would have been overkill in any of the circumstances, but there should be an equal principle applied in all of them when there simply isn't. And I look back and I think, how does anyone tolerate this? In the same way, like, how does anyone tolerate this? But
other examples are, Bernie Sanders is calling them, and others are calling them domestic terrorists. Well, Bernie Sanders ran a presidential campaign bragging about how he illegally occupied the University of Chicago buildings when he was there in the civil rights movement. So, we got to have one standard. If trespass is equal to terrorism, then Bernie's got to go to prison for a while. So, this is dangerous concepts they're getting to. My own view is that trespass should be treated as a crime, but treated the way it's normally treated, which is as a minor crime. That anybody who commits violence, treated accordingly. If you commit an assault, there's criminal laws that prohibit that. What we should not be doing is labeling any of this terrorism. That's a major dangerous path to go down. It minimizes what real terrorism is about. As Dershowitz pointed out, he goes, terrorism is when they're chopping off heads and sticking them on stakes and putting videos up for it. The terrorism is not somebody sitting in the speaker's chair. And let's distinguish the two. And it's very dangerous that they're going down this path. But they want to go even further. Not only do they want completely disparate standards, they want to apply them in different ways. Because, like, there were plenty of people. So let's go through some of the risks. So for the president, risk one, 25th Amendment, highly unlikely. Second risk, impeachment. He has not committed an impeachable offense. Two aspects to that. One is the impeachment, in my view, continuously needs to be a criminal act or it's not impeachable. Still stand by that. I haven't changed my view on that whatsoever. Second is he didn't commit a crime. Because there's talk of criminally prosecuting him as soon as he leaves as well.
I was watching the news this morning, Canadian news, and I see that a panel of four people, you would think, and I don't like using inflammatory rhetoric, you would think we were watching the vengeful going after politicians after they leave office, their family, their daughters. I'm listening to this panel talk. Then I find out that one of them talking is from the Lincoln Project, but they're talking about that he's going to be, they should go after him federally, state-wise, go after his daughter, his son, everyone in his entire family, and he's in misery for the rest of his days. Was I'm paraphrasing, but not that much. It's shocking to see. The question is just, on the one hand, when does it stop? What's the solution and where does it go? But yes, so the charges that Trump, they say 25th Amendment, no go, impeachment. I think we all agree on that. Is there even time to hear the arguments for impeachment?
Not if they do it through the regular process, but they're talking about short-circuiting all of it. And the other question is, can you impeach someone when they're no longer in office? As Dershowitz argued this morning, the better constitutional argument is no. Impeachment does not apply to private citizens, period. Impeachment only applies to office holders. So the idea that you can apply it to a private citizen because they once held office is contrary to the plain language of the Constitution. It's never been applied to the president after they've left office. It's a terrifying precedent to set. Do we want every time a new party takes over to go back and impeach the old guy all over again? This is not a good precedent. Impeachment is meant as a limited remedy to remove someone who is violating, who is abusing their office in a criminal manner that poses an imminent risk to the republic unless they are removed from office. It is their purpose is clear. Punish, 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 punish. They're in a fear mindset. They want to lash out. They want to crush their opposition. All of that is in play. And the third is, and with Trump, they want impeachment so that they can disqualify him. They want to use some old judge cases and other cases that, in my view, are not applicable, where they argued that simply a majority conviction without two-thirds conviction allowed for disqualification of future office. It shows you how obsessed they are with Trump. They want to. There's multiple things going on. Mainly, they want to terrorize the entire public into never voicing Trump support again. They want them to feel shame for being associated with him. They want them to suffer consequences, economic, cultural, political, social, for ever being associated with him. And then they want to make sure that nobody else gets the idea to ever be like Trump in the future. That's why they're taking the additional step of saying maybe they will stack the Senate. Now the senator from West Virginia is changing his view on that. Maybe they will pack the court. Maybe they will remove senators whose opinions they don't like, like Holly and Cruz, Sherrod Brown, Senator Brown called for that. I'm never going to forgive that and make sure that guy loses next time up. He's done. His political career is finished. He should look at the state he's in. It's Ohio. This is outrageous. This is the most outrageous attack on the Constitution and our democracy. Isn't what happened on January 6th. It's what our politicians and press are calling for in response to it.
I'm just pulling up a comment. Beverly Bryce says, what about the 70 million who voted for Trump? This is in the wake of...
They would like them all to feel ashamed, embarrassed, afraid, go live in your basement, publicly confess, get beat up on the way out, and maybe a few of you won't go to prison or have your lives destroyed. That's what their objective is.
And you know, I say it not as a partisan viewer, as an external viewer, you know, talking about unity and then talking about trying to oust the president in the last week and a half. And I talked about it in the vlog I put out yesterday.
Calling relatively moderate senators Nazis. You called Joe Biden, compared Josh Hawley to Goebbels. And the same moment he's talking about unity. This crook, he even had the gall to say, here in America, no one is above the law. You are the biggest symbol that the elite is above the law. The Democratic Party is the biggest example that there are people here above the law. I mean, the gaslighting, the nerve. But this is a class that's not used to their carriages being pushed aside. They're terrified of it happening in the future. They're horrified that Trump ever succeeded. And they're mortified that Trumpism could ever come back. And so they're going to weaponize every tool and access to their system to be able to try to crush dissent in every form and forum that they can.
And for 77LLG says, watch 1984 the other day. The media and political rants against Trump seemed terrifyingly like the opening scene, 2 minutes of hate. I referenced that in one of my vlogs, like the 2 minutes of hate in that movie where they play the video and everyone just froths at the mouth in anger. And the reality is this, like, and I'm just thinking out loud watching this, they know that there are 75 million people who are angry, for right or for wrong. Maybe they're wrong in feeling that way, that the election, that they're not happy with the way the election went. There are 75 million people nonetheless who you have to live with, who you rely on, in fact, for civil society. And instead of extending the remotest bit of an olive branch, it's impeach again, as if the biggest FU, knowing that it's going to antagonize the base. And I have a cynical side that, and I talked about it yesterday, is that they know that response that it's going to trigger, and they hope to trigger that response so they can further go along certain lines, such as the piece of legislation, the draft of legislation you sent me before here, in terms of domestic terrorism and a wonderful new law, because the first one worked out so well with their secret courts.
Yeah.
The charges that the people can face. First of all, we've seen some videos now, and if anybody has not seen Nate Brody's video from today, go watch it, because it's not anything. It's not anything you're going to see in the news, and it's verified, researched, and documented. Go watch Nate Brody's video and subscribe to his channel. Subscribe to Eric Hunley as well, but side issues. If the Capitol Police let them in, as we've seen under certain angles, not under all, but where they were let in, Capitol Police opened the doors. Can they face charges for that specific act?
Well, it's amazing. It's what I talked about a couple of weeks ago, that I was worried that the QAnon idea in the world was trying to instigate and incite an event that could be used to then attack people under conspiracy theories to bring them all in and also attack the president. I honestly didn't see this precise sequence of events occurring. I should have been monitoring the 8-gun boards where the QAnon world exists, which somehow the FBI wasn't aware of, which we'll get to. Because clearly this is what they were calling for. And you could not damage and discredit the president more, the president's movements more, the president's supporters more, the president's election challenge more, the cause of constitutional populism or constitutionalism, period, or constitutional liberties in general, than what they did. But it's interesting who did it. So the president can't be accused of anything. He didn't incite anything. The criminal law, there is a notorious, ugly history of sedition laws. It goes back to seditious libel, which the king invented because he wanted to stop people from criticizing him. And he wanted to make it a crime if you did. And ultimately, because of that, here in the United States, they tried people for sedition back during the colonial era. And towards the end, the beginning of the sign that the system was crumbling, was juries just refused to convict. They did the same thing in tax context. The famous Patrick Henry case was, give me liberty or give me death, the defense. was that they found the person guilty of not paying the tax. They just, back then, they could control sentencing and they issued the lowest possible fine. So the, and that's why we have our First Amendment. Our First Amendment was in response to these kind of laws. And despite that, didn't stop John Adams from trying to pass the Sedition Acts of 1798, of trying to punish his opponents, to try to criminalize press that was critical of him. Those laws ultimately would not last past 1800, and Thomas Jefferson would pardon everybody who'd ever been charged with under that law as an unconstitutional law. It would come back again in 1918. No surprise there. World War One, new excuse for why we have to punish dissent. And that's where the original, the current sedition conspiracy language comes from, those old statutes. The Supreme Court, as usual, oh, it's a war. Time to stick our head in the sand. Forget the Constitution. And that's what they did. They approved convictions of labor activists. And this is to my friends on the left. Do you think they're not coming for you next? Wake up. This has most commonly been used against the left more than the right historically in the United States and around the world. They did it to Eugene V. Debs. They convicted him on an absurd prosecution.
Before I forget, because you say, do you not think they're going to come for you next? And this is the thing about the freedom of speech argument as well. The leftist politicians and leftist entities were going after Zuckerberg. I saw the tweets and I couldn't even understand what the angle was, but they said, oh, look, Zuckerberg is now turning coat to please his political masters, the Democrats who are coming into office. And I thought they meant it in the sense that, like, it's a political savvy thing to do. They were criticizing him in that they don't think he did enough back in the day to censor, and now he's only doing it to please the Joe Biden administration coming in, and they're turning on Zuckerberg. It's an amazing thing where, like, even Zuckerberg, who is now censoring, thinking that he's now going to please somebody, will inevitably, you know, be found will be an object of the very same retribution that he is now inflicting on others. And everybody should appreciate that the revolution eventually eats itself. But okay, sorry.
Exactly. Well, so ultimately, the Holmes and Brandeis started realizing that they had gone too far with the Sedition Acts, wrote some dissents, but they were the only ones. Then, you know, the war ends, and of course they take the books, they eliminate the Sedition Acts from the laws. That was in part thanks to a lot of populist what we'll call then progressive Republicans, and aligned with some populist Democrats who helped get rid of that legislation. And they, in fact, started investigating the war machinery. And there were some great committees in the 1920s, some great populist politicians that did that. So there is a history that when the state goes too far in America, there's a populist rebellion against it soon thereafter. The last two times they tried this, 1798 and 1918, it led to populist rebellions against those precise laws just 2 years later, that would eliminate those laws from the books for decades. But finally, the Supreme Court, people don't know this, the original libel claim brought in New York Times versus Sullivan was written using the language of old seditious libel. And so they not only clarified the law of defamation in New York Times v. Sullivan, they finally made clear that sedition statutes are unconstitutional, period, whenever they're applied to speech. This was followed up in the True Threats jurisprudence and by Brandenburg versus Ohio. So going back just to what they could charge President with, did President Trump give express, direct action inciting people to do unlawful activities that were going to be performed imminently? The answer is no, 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 and no, and they need all four. So what the president said is, let's have a peaceful protest outside the rally where your voices are heard. What he did not say was, hey, will you go break into the Senate and the House, completely destroy my career and reputation, completely wreck the ability to make an effective argument on the election issues, completely distract from all these issues and damage my cause? No, he didn't say any of that. People claiming he said imminent incitement are lying.
I say they may not be lying because they read into things and they read what they want into it.
Yeah, put it this way. If they're not lying, they're opening the door to their own people getting prosecuted. Bernie Sanders went around. I mean, I got his book back here that talks about revolution, take radical action. He said Trump was elected by Russia collusion. And then somebody who believed him went out and shot congressmen. By Bernie Sanders standards, he's now inciting domestic terrorism, and he now should be expelled from the Senate. Do any of these incompetent rubes that purport to rule us understand this? It's apparent that they do not. So the president did nothing illegal. The president did nothing impeachable. That won't stop him from trying. Now, the question, like I said, constitutionally, I do not believe they can impeach or convict someone who is no longer in office. They're going to raise apparently a new constitutional set of issues if they try. I don't believe the Senate is that politically suicidal, but I can't put it past them because you have people like the turtle up there. So they cannot have a full hearing. McConnell's already told everybody we can't even conduct a hearing or a trial before Biden is in. So he's already said it's a waste of time, but it won't stop the Democrats from proving how insane they are and unlocking every Pandora's box that exists. So we'll see. But but for everyone else who went there, there's two different components. And it's really going to depend on the scale and scope. Are the prosecutors smart or are the prosecutors stupid? And that's an open question when it comes to the federal prosecutors in this country. Because if they're smart, what they will do is they will only look at the people who have participated in the initial breach or participated in clear, violent action. Because here's what happened. You had a small group of people at the Capitol who were the ones to breach all of the security, who chose to do so before the people listening to Trump could even get there, likely because they were afraid that if those people were there, they would stop them from doing it. Like as soon as Alex Jones and his people showed up, he got out his megaphone and said, pull back, get out. Our petition for protest is on the other side. Do not do Antifa. Do not do BLM. Do not commit a crime. Do not give them what they want. And he was out there knowing that a lot of people, the Q people, weren't going to like him saying that, did it anyway. So, and he was helping organize, and it's one of the reasons why it didn't get bigger is because people like Jones were there to stop it from getting bigger. But if Jones had been there from the get-go, it likely never happens. So this is why the speech didn't even have a causal effect, because the people who raided the Capitol did so while the speech was still going on. They weren't at the speech. They didn't even hear the speech. And they appear to be a combination of multiple groups. There clearly are some infiltrators, instigators. Some people have been identified as being associated with causes other than Trump. But the big group that was affiliated with, well, you can call them affiliate. They think of themselves as Trump supporters. Put it this way, was QAnon world. So the reason why, even though we've been both taking a lot of crap for saying QAnon is dangerous, don't pay attention to them, ignore them, it's a dangerous movement, everything associated with it is wrong, it's bad intel, is because I could see this coming now in some form for 6 months.
And now I'll stop you there, because I never knew anything about this. I've learned as we've been doing the streams, and I remember the first time you started talking about it. And your message from the very beginning, which is why I get particularly irked when people... it's trolley comments, and they say, you know, we've contributed to this by breaking down the lawsuits and lending credibility to the idea that, you know, the Texas suit had legitimacy. But when people say things that, like, I try to attribute any of this to what we do, I think you haven't watched that. This has been Robert's message from the very beginning, before I even understood it, that this alternative theory was not just, I said it's a distraction. I said that people are entitled to believe what they want. And your theory from the beginning was it's going to be a distraction. It's going to pacify people who would otherwise be active. And it's going to activate people to do things which are going to be counterproductive, which is what we effectively saw at the end of the overtaking Capitol Hill. Actions which, whether or not anyone thinks, you know, you can justify them, when they act against your interests in the most direct, immediate ways, they're counterproductive to the point of destructiveness. And you had been mentioning it from the very beginning. Don't go down that road. You're preaching it. It's not what is going to help, and it's only going to detract. And now we see it. I think you said a while back, the mainstream media is going to run with these lawsuits, the Dominion lawsuits from Sidney Powell, and it's going to discredit from the constitutional lawsuits. And that's all that we hear now. And we're going to get into the defamation suit later, but it's what you've been saying from the beginning. So when anybody comes to this channel and is not aware of that history, it's an irritating thing, but it's what you've been saying for months.
And our show saved people's lives, because there were people there who were actually fans. It's interesting. The way they all introduced themselves to me is, hey, you're on that Viva show. So they try to remember my name. They're thinking, oh, I'm trying to remember, but I know you're on the Viva show. But there's several people I ran into there. They're that way.
I never heard this, by the way. Everybody watching, this is the first time Robert's actually told me this, and now I'm sort of oddly shocked.
there are several people there that knew not to go in from their own experience, but also because they had been listening to us say, be careful of anything like this. And so they were aware, and they're like, hold on a second. I'm not going to go into the Capitol. Something is up here. Something is AWOL. Something is amiss. I'm not going to trust what's taking place. And it was because we were warning about these kind of disinformation campaigns trying to lead to self-destructive actions. And then there are people there. So the group that breached the Capitol Police security that created the chaotic scene was not the group that was watching the speech. And they were a mix. There was some Antifa and BLM types there or left associated groups, but a lot of them were QAnon people. The woman who died was following Linwood and QAnon. That's a death that's on both of them, in my view. Linwood is continuing to tweet. Well, he's no longer tweeting. He's gone from Twitter, but he's on Parler, continuing to put out gibberish, dangerous gibberish and nonsense that's encouraging and Q following, which is inciting actual criminal activity, and that's meant to destroy the Trump movement by its self-discrediting actions. So, but there are people there that we didn't go in. Actually, there are several of them that were came up when I was at the airport. Again, I think they may have. I think they did say Viva Show too. So it was interesting. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm just Viva's sidekick. I'm Ed McMahon. He's Johnny Carson. Just remember me that way. But they were thankful and glad that they didn't go in. Someone who had been a prior client of mine was glad that he didn't go in. I knew people on the ground there that knew because I told him be very careful. I didn't go to either event. I was hanging out at the chief of staff of a major official in Washington's offices, watching all of this unfold with a bunch of us watching it on TV. And Trump had no clue there was any risk of us, which I'll get into what some potential defenses might be. But so for group one, if they're smart, if the prosecution limits the prosecution to just trespass, violent action on federal property, disorderly conduct, those kind of charges focused on the groups that they can clearly see breach security, physically attack security, physically broke property, physically took property. Then they won't have a major problem with those prosecutions. All of them have faced a problem generally, and that they're all going to be prosecuted in the District of Columbia. And that means they have DC judges and DC juries. This is a problem with our system. The fact that DC gets to control all of these cases like this, we've never had a situation where so many political cases are brought in a jury pool and a judicial pool so extraordinarily hostile to one political side. I mean, it's like trying civil rights people in 1955 Birmingham with all white Southern juries, arguably maybe worse, because at least a few of those people were pro civil rights. They backed Big Jim Folsom, one of my icons from Alabama. Great governor, great state of Alabama back then. They have problems, but if they're smart, they'll limit the scale of their scope to those people. And a lot of those are QAnon people. By the way, the reason, like, ask yourself, how does this Air Force veteran is part of breaking into glass, trying to get in the Senate chambers or the House chambers, whichever it was? Why does she, what outcome does she think is going to happen from
all? No, especially, and it's one of these things where, like, I say, I never do these things because don't do these things. Things escalate quickly. And I first movie reference, Fight Club. It's like after Robert Paulson thing, you know, they say you're running around, you know, destroying monuments and blowing things up in the night. What do you think is going to happen? And I saw the video and it's awful. You have armed security behind a barricaded door with politicians, arms drawn, and Ashley, jumping through an open window with a backpack, Lord knows what's in it. And it's just, you have to question what was the long-term plan with that? And how far do they think it's going to go before something tragic happens?
But that's where QAnon came in. QAnon targeted religious people and military people to convince them that they were really acting at the behest and the behalf of insiders. So when they're all there, because my first thought was, why did they? And I realized, oh, of course, it's QAnon, and then started figuring out it was. They'd been saying this on the 8-gun boards now for weeks, which will raise questions about the FBI, which we'll get to, and raise questions about what intelligence briefers were failing to tell the president about, which we'll also get to. Maybe reasons they may want to be careful about where they go in terms of the president or other people. But the nature of it is she thinks she's part of a military operation. that this is part of a secret operation that the White Hats want her to do, take over the House and the Senate, because this way they can seize the bad actors and the White Hats can finally win. And the criminals and the cartel operators and the Chi-Com spies will be caught up in that. She's just being a citizen soldier, a digital soldier. And QAnon had conditioned people to start thinking this way, slowly and steadily. Brilliant psyop, a psyop that needs to be studied. And I, for one, am still not convinced that it has no U.S. governmental ties. And the reason for that, aside from the sophistication of the QAnon as a psyop, I mean, it suckered millions of people. It suckered people with no history of criminal activity to do something completely self-destructive, to the degree, for one person, it led to their death. I mean, so the now, that was not, in my view, a justifiable shooting. That person should have been out in front, should have said, hey, we're going to shoot, hey, we're going to shoot, hey, we're going to shoot. You don't hear any of that in the video. Because she seems to me like someone that could have led to a cognitive break where she steps back. For him to just be on the side and go, boom, boom, you walk through the door.
I heard the crowd saying that they have drawn their weapons. This is one of the ones where I'll wait for Nate Brody's breakdown, if ever. But yep. This is just one of those situations, a woman running through a broken window, a person, doesn't matter who, with a backpack, politicians in there. You never know. I mean, it's, I don't
I
know.
Mean, I can understand the defense for him. Now, they have opened up already a federal criminal investigation into his conduct as being an unjustified shooting. So at least their initial reaction is that it was not a clean shoot. They didn't follow procedures. Generally, Capitol Police uses rubber bullets to avoid some of this. So that's so there's a lot of questions about what went on. It appears that there was massive disinformation within the Capitol Police structure, and that operates at multiple levels. So the first stage is the people who trespassed, the people who committed assault, the people who damaged property, the people who were violent and disorderly conduct. Those people, they have pretty basic, easy to prove charges against. There's a whole bunch of people, even people that were in the Capitol, who did not know what was happening. So what happened was a bunch of people who did come down from the march, by the time they get there, they're the ones being waved in by Capitol Police outside and inside, because it appears Capitol Police were confused about what they were supposed to be doing. And these people, they walk in, they're like, okay, and everybody seems to be having fun and singing songs, and they're letting us walk around. And these are the people that, when I'd say, when people keep telling me it was all one mass riot, I was like, why do you see people walking between the lines? I mean, they have those ropes. They don't even broach the ropes. They walk right neatly within the ropes, looking at the different Capitol sculptures and paintwork. So most of the people that were inside did not know what was happening, did not realize it, because you had police in isolated locations. The large part of the Capitol, people don't know this. The Capitol is a massive complex, a huge, huge building. And so they're walking around. They're not processing that this was criminal. They didn't pass anything that said trespass. They didn't say, you know, for many of these people, they'd never been to the Capitol before. No idea. So I hope those people are not being targeted, because that would be expanding the scale and scope in an impermissible way. For the people on the outsides, they didn't know what was going on. Like, a lot of people were climbing the walls because it was like fun. I mean, they could have walked up the steps. The photos are misleading. They make it look like they're climbing the walls to break into the Capitol. No, it was kids just climbing the walls for fun. They're saying, hey, climb this and come up here, just because it became that kind of scene. They don't think they're doing anything trespassing onto property or anything else. And it's not clear that they had, and they, a lot of them were waved on by police and brought in by Capitol Police. So, and the people in the outskirts weren't part of anything. In fact, the few scenes you see with them is you also see them, often see them screaming at people to stop trying to break in, stop trying to do damage, et cetera. They didn't even know what was happening. Also, a lot of people's cell services, for whatever reason, weren't working. So there were people that went to the event and came down. One of them was interviewed, former leftist, interviewed on Dave Rubin's show, The Rubin Report. She was like, I had no idea what was happening until I got back to my hotel room. I had no idea that anything had happened inside. So hopefully they will differentiate. Unfortunately, employers and the press are not. Their employers firing people en masse simply if they have identified as being in D.C. that day. There are people that are being discriminated against in social media simply if they've been seen at the scene that day. And if the prosecutors get out of hand, they may try to go after those people as well, and that would be problematic. So far, they have not. And I hope they don't. Now there's claims of bringing seditious conspiracy. Seditious conspiracy is a criminal statute, but it's a deeply problematic statute. They brought it back from its zombie death to go after people related to 9/11 or connected to 9/11 type events after 9/11. And that's a deep, deep problem. And now the federal courts turned a blind eye and let it happen. But it's supposed to be limited by the First Amendment, as the court, Supreme Court, made clear in the 1960s in Sullivan and Brandenburg. And in Brandenburg, remember, a Klansman went out and said, "We want to commit a bunch of violence against people right down the street." The Supreme Court said that's not criminal. In a later decision in the True Threats jurisprudence, they said somebody who pointed through a scope of a gun and said something bad about LBJ could not be criminally prosecuted. So it's got to be limited by First Amendment protections. That's why the president's completely in the clear. But he never said, he said peaceful explicitly. And his people weren't the ones who did the breach. The breach was done by people that were already at the Capitol who wanted to avoid the people from the speech showing up before they could do the breach, because it was the QAnon people getting the secret intel and part of the secret military operation. Now, that leads to another line of defenses. This case does have the potential to be the second Chicago 7. So if people want to watch a Netflix series, there's a great Netflix series on the Chicago 7. There's other movies and documentaries. William Kunstler partially came to fame in the Chicago 7 case. And what was Chicago 7 about? An accusation that seven people had helped incite riots at the Democratic National Convention in 1968. And to be frank, they had done a little bit more activity. Well, they'd done a lot more activity than the president had done. But they ultimately made a mockery of the entire criminal trial process and the corruption of the Chicago system, so much so that on appeal, all their convictions were set aside. And watch that, because it also shows you how to do a political trial and how to handle it. If these prosecutors are dumb and they start going too far afield and they start alleging things like sedition and the rest, then there's going to be constitutional challenges. And then probably some smart, sophisticated lawyers are going to end up being part of the case, and they're going to make it like the Chicago 7 trial. So and here's another line of defense they could employ. Let's say hypothetically I'm right. There's two possibilities I'm right about QAnon related information. If QAnon actually is tied to any U.S. governmental actor, then there's an entrapment defense present here, because the QAnon pretended to be one, convinced a lot of people he was one, and got people to take action believing it was their constitutional legal duty to do so. And got people who would not have otherwise, and historically had not otherwise, conducted such conduct. That fits a potential entrapment defense. And there's a lot of variations of this from informant instigator activities, both in the terrorism post 9/11 context. You have it somewhat in the Whitmer kidnapping context. You have it in a wide range of contexts.
DC. There's a big if. Even if there's instigation from an outside entity, whatever that is, you're going to have to show that that is some sort of government-related outside entity in order to raise entrapment. If it's a non-governmental entity, the entrapment defense doesn't work.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where discovery, these criminal cases, why discovery for that theory of evidence? So somebody smart, if they go too far afield and try to demand extractionistic kind of sentences, you know, a pound of flesh kind of sentences, like the Merchant of Venice from Shakespeare's days, our first literary reference tonight, then they'll get some smart lawyers involved, and those smart lawyers will start to pursue massive discovery about two things: everything that connects QAnon to the government, and secondly, and that doesn't necessarily mean Q, could be just part of the QAnon world that was instigating this, inspiring this, motivating this, trying to get people to do so. But secondly, and this is where I'm curious about QAnon's relevance and pertinence to governmental activity, or whether other governmental actors at least were complicit at some level from a civil liability perspective. Apparently, the FBI and the New York Police Department had warned Capitol Police that they needed to have regular security measurements, which is high security measurements, for the rally. But apparently, somebody at the FBI in D.C. told Capitol Police to effectively stand down, in that not treating this event like a traditional security event, a high security event, like an inauguration. The Capitol Police have over 2,400 police officers for one building. They can easily protect that building from the small number of people who engaged in the incursion here. The only reason the incursion had any chance of success, aside from doing it while the Trump rally was still ongoing up above, was that there was minimal Capitol Police presence. And it turns out the Capitol Police, well, they're getting blamed for it. It turns out they apparently were relying on information from the FBI. Now, that takes us to the second component in the QAnon connection. The FBI for the last 2 years has said Q and QAnon is on their domestic terror watch list. So this leaked out years ago. So I have no doubt that FBI agents have been monitoring the message boards, monitoring everything else. And on those message boards, NBC News put out the story. BuzzFeed put out a similar story saying everybody knew if you'd been following 8Gun and Q and QAnon that they planned on raiding the Capitol. So how in the world was this information not relayed either to the president in his intelligence briefings, where he would have taken corrective action had he known this? This was the last thing he wanted to have happen. Nor was it apprised of the Capitol Police. So if I was a criminal defense lawyer, I would be pursuing that information. I would want to know everything the FBI knew, everything the FBI didn't disclose. Did they not disclose because they didn't want to rat out informants that were part of certain groups or part of certain people that were attending? That might be why. I mean, I'm curious. Either way, they managed to facilitate, but for the FBI's incorrect information given to the Capitol Police, this doesn't happen. So then that raises civil liability questions for people that got hurt. There were four people who died there. If there's inconsistent information about the Capitol Police officer, the first thing I heard was that it was unrelated. Then people in the press were saying it was related. Now we're hearing it was unrelated. So it does not appear that a Capitol Police officer died because of something that happened at the Capitol or an injury suffered at the Capitol. There's no proof yet, no evidence produced yet that it caused the death of a Capitol Police officer.
And I was looking up some information there, and it's amazing, actually. It's just the information is so conflicted. You literally don't know what to believe anymore because you get diametrically opposing stories from sources which are either equally credible or equally lacking credibility.
Which relates to two other things. Clearly, Capitol Police on the grounds were being given inconsistent information because some are trying to stop people, some are letting people through. They clearly didn't know what they were supposed to do. There was a complete breakdown of the chain of command and communications. Also, it appears that people on the inside, the House members, the senators, their security or the security protecting them and the vice president were told a lot of misinformation. Leftist media were circulating stories that the protesters or the people that broke through had guns and were shooting them. That never happened. No evidence of that I've seen so far. But apparently the House and Senate members believed it. It may explain why that cop shot. In other words, he's hearing bombs, guns. Okay, I can't let anyone through. And that would explain his mindset might mean he didn't commit any criminal action, even if he might be civilly responsible for what took place. I don't like that degree of escalation of force, period. I never have. I've complained about it in every context, no matter the victim, politically or any other reason. But so there was another source of disinformation. You see AOC propagating this on the press this morning, saying, oh, we thought half of us were going to die. Why? There's no evidence I've seen yet that any of the people that breached had guns. There's no evidence I've seen yet that any of them had weapons. There's no evidence I've seen that they've used those weapons. There was very little action of violence that occurred. So why did half the Senate and the House think they were about to die?
Well, I mean, that is undoubtedly political hyperbole, rhetoric to stoke the flames of, to stoke everything.
The Puerto Rican independence movement who actually did shoot up Congress, who members of whom got pardoned by Jimmy Carter, nor is it like they were members of the people of the Weather Underground who actually bombed the Senate and Capitol building, who were pardoned by William Jefferson Clinton. It's interesting, the double standards present. And it's not like the people who took over the Wisconsin State Capitol for 2 months without any consequence. And this is where people wonder where that's going to come in. That's all going to be relevant, in my view, from two perspectives. One, some of these defense lawyers may bring selective prosecution claims because they'll point out other people's similar conduct have not been charged. And there again, it will depend on the scale and the scope. If they focus just on the limited group of people who committed clear trespass and violence, that's one thing. If they focus on people who just walked in and maybe should have known better, well, they're less culpable than the people who took over in 2018 or 2019 of the Capitol, and definitely the people who took over Wisconsin in 2010. So not only it opens up selective prosecution claims under the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment, but it also introduces as evidence to their willfulness. So all these people are going to argue, potentially, if you're a defendant, say, look, I heard all year that this is legal, because I saw it happen all across America, and I saw the press tell me it's okay. I saw Joe Biden say it's okay. I saw Kamala Harris say it's okay. I saw Nancy Pelosi say it was okay. I saw Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters call for, and Kamala Harris call for more of it to happen.
And the funny thing is, like, I had a family member, an extended family member, you know, message me, you know, a meme. It's Trump with a burning background, and he says he's almost done. And I was like, look, I can play the meme game all day also. It's that memes are not how one understands things, but there is a broader, there's no explaining this away. There's just a broader context in which this occurred in the last year. Now, but I want to bring this one up because one guy had zip ties. There is
he was
no
even arrested in Nashville. Oh, yeah. So the, yeah. I think the thought process was of some of the bad actors that are involved and connected to QAnon was that some of this would happen, that they would kidnap people, that they would hold people hostage or something else. So the, I think, but the reality was they didn't have enough people willing to take proactive action. And because so many of the people there didn't want any of this to occur, they couldn't get away with it. Whereas frankly, if this had been an Antifa or BLM, they likely would have got away with it because people would have been more willing to embrace it. They've been willing to raid buildings, burn, loot, anything else. So they didn't have an audience that was willing to really embrace it. As capital occupations go, this was one of the less consequential.
Well, and I'll say, just so there's no misunderstanding, a dude with zip ties breaking into Capitol Hill, yeah, yep. There's going to be appropriate charges, and there's no justification, and there's no but for that. No but. Absolutely. Now, accusing the guy with the wolf hat, Baked Alaska, of terrorism, maybe more arguable. But now let's see. Cleopatra's in the house. She says, so we're now going to pay up to $50,000 for new students' education. But those of us who paid our own way through law school, medical school, can just go cry in the corner. Really? We're not discussing this now, but nice to see you, Cleopatra.
It's because these institutions of indoctrination have worked much better than the prior educational institutions did for that particularized purpose. So the people that paid $50,000 paid for an education, whereas now these people paid for an indoctrination to where they believe things that it's just like 1984. It's like they're looking at the TV screen. I mean, they're completely conflicting and contradicting something they said 3 months ago. I'm opposed to violence in any form, any shape, or any means, just instinctively by nature. And that's across the board. Now, that doesn't mean I'll pretend something is terrorism that isn't, because that's that's more dangerous to our constitutional liberties, and I care more about that than political labels that people want to stick on things. But the whole nature of how it transpired is because of what transpired over the last 6 months to a year, and the reason why it all may come into play, if they're smart, they'll prosecute the most culpable who have the least capabilities of defending themselves. In other words, frankly, the least means. If they're stupid, they'll come after the least culpable who have the most means. And then they'll have a Chicago 7 trial on their hands. And that will be a different dynamic. And there's definitely a lot of interesting discovery that could take place, a lot of interesting defenses that could take place. So it would be interesting to see if they were smart, they would just wrap up a lot of plea deals, 6-1 year kind of things. A real serious threat they can deal with in different manners. Maybe more serious sentence, but there's only a few of those. You know what I mean? Like, your Baked Alaska is like a journalistic kind of guy who goes around and films this. He used to work for BuzzFeed back in the day. So the idea that he was there to commit any kind of terrorism is absurd. The other problem with all this is if Trump really wanted some dramatic, terrible action to take place, that would have happened, right? He could have called for millions to come to the Capitol. He didn't do any of that.
But this is where we're going to start talking dog whistles, that when he says be peaceful, he means something else. And that's the thing about dog whistles.
It's the Orwellian world we're in. Everything means the opposite. Everything means the opposite. It's incredible. It's a very perilous place to be.
You know, there's no question about it. Everything means the opposite. Everything means what you want it to mean because you're reading intent and you're not actually listening and understanding.
And that's why you have clear constitutional standards. It has to be express request for knowing unlawful action with imminent outcome. None of those are met here. And that's why we need those objective tests, because if we don't have them, it will be the eye of the believer, and we just start weaponizing criminal prosecution for our political opponents. And hopefully that won't occur here, but we will see.
Now, what do we want? I want to do – I think this is good. We've covered this. People were asking all week, you know, what charges the Insurrection Act. Incidentally, people keep asking. Trump has not signed the Insurrection Act yet that you know.
No, nor would he ever. Hopefully people now realize that they were wanting him to do that, so that they could immediately arrest him and all of his supporters for seditious conspiracy. This was always the goal. I mean, they just used him giving a banal speech connected to, just in time and geography, other people doing something bad to want to put him in prison and remove him from office. Imagine what would have happened had he tried to invoke the Insurrection Act. He would have been in prison the next day. He would have been within hours. He would have been locked up and sealed off in the White House without the inability to do anything. So that should have shown everybody the QAnon trick was a mass deception meant to try, not only we'll get into Dominion next, but with the other capacity of it, it was meant to, there's a reason why they were ready to use the insurrection language right away. Everybody was on script with that. And the media is not that smart. And we know Joe Biden ain't that smart anymore. So for everybody to be right on script right away meant that they had hoped Trump would actually take the bait. He never was going to take the bait on that. The only mistake Trump made is, was somebody misinformed him about the risk that people were trying to infiltrate under the guise of QAnon or whatever else to discredit and damage his cause and his rally. He wanted what you described. 500,000 people singing Alleluia in USA outside the Capitol. So the Capitol.
Yeah, and this is, I think Scott Adams made this point, setting aside how Scott Adams feels about Trump and whether or not he should resign, that the MO going forward, make sure that there are bad actors in any peaceful protests so that you can effectively outlaw the constitutional right to protest in the first place. Yes. And it's, you know, what a devilish
an old scheme. Now there are very sophisticated protest operators who know how to avoid that. The thing with this is because Trump has such a chaotic organization, which is to say it's not really organized, this was easier to pull off. But the key here was they never even infiltrated the group. They were a totally separate group that did this raid. And so the people that showed up later just didn't even realize what was happening. So and it was, you know, Fuentes and some of these other schmucks that people had told me to listen to. They're idiots. They're nitwits. Alt-right. There's nothing right about the alt-right. They're a bunch of crackpots. Hopefully the smarter people will now recognize that QAnon was always a psyop meant to discredit, damage Trump. Not to listen, ignore Lin Wood. Not only is he insane, he's now saying, oh, Trump secretly, he's down in Texas, he's secretly organizing thing, and the military are coming over here. Get out of your fantasy land, Lin. Man, I regret that I did not get my Christmas gift of a straitjacket to him in time. So, c'est la vie.
This might be the segue. We'll do this question with Parler because it's fitting, and then we'll get into Dominion versus Powell. So, Lin, to say that we asked the question, why were Lin Wood's tweets still up, some of the ones that he had up last week? And we talked about the direct threat, you know, the legal requirements for what is a threat under the law, but not necessarily under terms of service. So question is, you know, was the tweets that he was putting out, were they violating terms of service to a degree that Twitter could have justified kicking him off long ago? And I think the answer was yes. And we were pontificating as to why they wouldn't have already done it. And now, you know, there could be some people putting two and two together. Is what was on Twitter was amplified definitely on Parler and is now being used as the pretext for Google, Apple, and Amazon to shut down Parler overnight on the basis that that what can be seen there can be seen there. And the tweets were over the top.
What have you been warning Rumble and others about? That there's going to be people that infiltrate their boards for the purposes of doing illicit activities, for the purpose of discrediting them and weakening their abilities. Parler in particular had been paying no heed. Not only did they not take Wood off, they promoted him and let him trend. Interestingly, he was getting to trend, and he would ultimately, by the way, propagate raiding the Capitol. He did it. Those people, and you look it up, he was tweeting someone else who said, here's what to do. While one of us was accidentally from Twitter during the time a lot of this plotting was taking place in the on the 8-con boards, so I'm sure it's all coincidental. Personally, I've no surprise that as soon as the event happens and they view Wood to get the intended effect, Wood is gone, Powell is gone, Flynn is gone. Their whole goal was for the Empire Strikes Back. They needed the pretext of an event. This is all of human history. They always need. Of variations, whether they're false flag events or real events, they need the political staging or the political interpretation of the events to justify massive retaliatory punitive action. And it seems like they were ready to go. Collusion taking place, eh? On the same day, Twitter takes off Trump, Facebook takes off, and Google and Apple says, we're here to help too. We're going to remove Parler from our places from being able to be accessed on our stores. And not long thereafter, Amazon, why did they have Amazon in their stores? This is a sign all the conservative, even the conservative establishment, your conservatives with more influence, Dan Bongino's other people, been trying them forever. And frankly, some of them did not speak out. Most of them did not speak out on Alex Jones's cases. I was like, what's happening to Jones is going to come to you. We are all going to be Alex Jones someday, whether we like him or dislike him, whether you like him or dislike him. What they did to him is what they're going to do to you if you're considered a dissident threat to the system.
And incidentally, you might have been glitching a little bit there, but you seem to be a little bit better now. The Trump thing, to say or to suggest or to think it's not coordinated, he was banned from social media platforms where I didn't even know he existed. I saw the list. It was Snapchat. I saw Snapchat and it's like, I lost it. I was like, this is over the top. And it's, whatever I believe of the act itself, it's over the top one way or the other. But then they make the announcement with Parler. And it's not to say that anybody from a legal perspective should that it's an approval of those tweets. I think legally, and I think business-wise, those tweets on Parler are liabilities that ought to have been paid attention to beforehand. You know that it's going to get the response it's going to get. They're going to leverage it. They're going to exploit it, and they're going to jam it down your throat, which is what they've done now. But here's the question. From a business perspective, from a legal perspective, does Parler have any rights or recourses against Apple, Google, or Amazon? I mean, do they have unfair business practices? Some people were asking me, do they have RICO possibilities? I don't know. I can't even imagine how that would go. But do they have any recourse? Does Parler have any recourse against these platforms or service providers to go after them?
Potentially. Like, here's another risk that they did. I wonder if I mention the name again, whether I'll suddenly start to budge out. I mean, it's coincidental, right? Say, Alex.
So
it's amazing. The man whose name cannot be spoken of. They also apparently had weak lawyers. I've been trying to tell all these people that if someone was not like Alex Jones was a defining line, if you weren't willing to stand with him and approach and object to what was happening in big tech and lawfare, then you were at that you wouldn't stand up or be ready to stand up with. Necessary. And apparently Parler also had institutional lawyers who, what did they do the moment pressure came? They jumped ship.
Okay, now I want people to appreciate this. Someone sent me the link beforehand. Before I couldn't believe it. The header said the lawyers dropped them. I was like, that can't be right. The lawyers dumped them. Now, maybe they don't have money to pay their lawyers. Still very bad lawyers to dump your client the day that they have bad problems that result in them not paying, because Lord knows you took money from them in the past. But I don't know. And I don't know one way or the other.
If Rebecca Mercer is a co-owner, I can't believe they don't have money. So that's the Mercer family that co-founded Breitbart. That's very, very wolf. So it's because, Steve Bannon, same thing. I've been trying to tell all these people that what happened to Jones is a template for what's going to happen to them. So be prepared. Be prepared with legal defenses. Frankly, I told people in Trump world that, and they weren't ready for it either. Be prepared for everything that's coming down the pipeline. See what legal defenses you can mount, but also have backup technology in place. That's why we created the Locals Board, to be someplace the most outside of big tech control as is practicable in the modern era. And people can go vivabarneslaw.locals.com in case we disappear from the social outlets some future.
I'm not going down. I'm not going anywhere. And if it happens, I'm not going down without a fight, because I'm not bending over or bending the knee. I conduct myself in a manner at all times that I think should never warrant unpersoning. So if I'm not tempting fate.
But yes, I mean, it is a terrifying age and era when big tech can remove the president of the United States from communicating directly to the citizenry. I mean, that's where we're at. And that is a based on a ludicrous interpretation. I mean, that's where my friends on the left, they could easily apply this to Bernie Sanders tomorrow and remove him tomorrow. And do you think it's not going to happen? They actually already started removing left podcasts, left social media platforms that are anti-empire, anti-surveillance state. They're already removing him, already in process. People like Michael Tracy and Glenn Greenwald, to their credit, have been screaming about this for years. Even Matt Taibbi started talking about it over the last year. But your loser lefties like Crystal Ball are celebrating some of these bad precedents. Joe Rogan needs to not, Crystal Ball, if her intellect was a pool, it doesn't go past the shallow end. Some of these people should not have been promoted by Joe Rogan, God bless, because they're unreliable allies. Just as COVID, the lockdowns and how people responded told you a lot about who was really a constitutional protector and who wasn't, how people are responding to big tech censorship, how people are responding to wanting to weaponize the criminal and civil process against their political opponents are equal indicators of who is and is not a reliable protector of constitutional liberty. Parler may have legal claims. It's tricky. Like people have been saying, what about antitrust claims? Well, antitrust claims are when you're removing someone that's a competitor to you. Obviously, Parler is not a competitor to Apple or a competitor to Google. The big problem I have been arguing for quite some time to try to bring collusion claims between the media and big tech or media platforms, social media platforms and big tech, arguing that they are colluding together, conspiring together to take out each other's competitors. So Twitter will promote Google and Apple. Google and Apple will return the favor by blocking their competitors from their Play Stores or the Google Play Store or the Apple Store.
I thought I remembered reading in the Google antitrust lawsuit that it could be antitrust if they're just using their monopolistic powers to crush anything, not necessarily a competitor, but just any other business. Is there?
It varies. So the my view is antitrust should be interpreted that broadly. But the Rehnquist era courts, unfortunately, these were a lot of Republican judges, gutted that and basically watered down antitrust action in such a way that's very tough to bring. And I do not trust the current Supreme Court, including several Trump nominees, to defend antitrust law. So it's possible, but right now it's still a reach. Now, where I think their greatest vulnerability is, but you can definitely look at consumer protection laws, antitrust laws, look at their contracts. Some of their contracts are bad. Jones had to go through all of this. The PayPal wouldn't allow their payment processors to be used for Jones. All the server companies wouldn't allow the servers to be used for Jones. The various banks wouldn't allow the banks to be used for Jones. All the social media platforms censored him and banned him and even banned use of his name, despite the fact that it's a pretty common name. So he had to find ways around all of this. And that's why I've always said that InfoWars is a model. Whether you like or dislike, agree or disagree with it, I think it's useful information for people to have, even if you disagree with it, so you know very independent idiosyncratic opinions may be. But the other utility is it's showing a way to get around the big tech monopolist at every level, at payment processing, banking, emailing, because MailChimp prevented any email use related to InfoWars. So they've suffered the same thing. Amazingly, Trump's campaign now can't fundraise because the fundraising payment processor they're using was not reliable. They can't email their supporters because their email engine was not reliable. I've been telling people MailChimp's not reliable for a long time now. They can't direct message people on text because those companies will not allow them to utilize their technology for it. They were using all conventional technologies. They were saying, "Oh, that just happened to Alex Jones. It would never happen to us." Alex Jones was the template. So if you want to know what's coming, go back and look at what happened to him. And if you want to know how to defeat it, look at how he did so. So that's why there's plenty of methods and means of resistance available. Now, from a legal perspective, aside you thinking, look at all the other claims. I think they're all a reach unless you get some state legislatures to pass some new laws. And I think that might happen. They may be able to bring claims in foreign countries. I mean, like, for example, in Poland, it's a crime to kick people off of certain social media. In certain foreign countries, you're not allowed to remove state actors from social media. So, and they did this universally, as far as I know. Trump can't tweet in Poland or Hungary either. It may be that they can use international laws to their support and international jurisdictions to their support because these social media giants are everywhere. So I think, you know, be creative, be inventive. Look at all the different jurisdictions around the world, all the different legal claims around the world. But I think that the biggest vulnerability or easiest, quickest vulnerability is securities class actions because Twitter lied to everybody about their intentions. I mean, they just testified in Congress last year that they would never remove a state actor from social media. This has been their pretext to keep Khomeini and other people on social media. Twitter has defended allowing terrorists to use Twitter to commit terrorism. So the idea that clearly they misled the market and they've already fallen, I think, 3%. and it's going to continue to decline somewhat.
I posted the comment in the community tab. Whoever gets closest to tomorrow's opening stock price, I'm going to send a shirt to. So hopefully you're North American bound. And if there's a tie, more than one. So that, I mean, that is the, it's an interesting thing because the stock might, well, here's the issue. The stock price might go up. And in which case there's going to be no securities claim, right?
Correct. It depends on, though, it depends on length of time. It's already taken a hit. So the argument would be that once people saw this information and this information contradicted what they previously stated, that there's fraud on the market. And so even if Twitter or another one's rebound later, the argument will be it still would have been higher, but for this misrepresentation due to the timing of the drop. It is almost no question that the 3%, 2-3% drop, depending on where you were time-wise, was a direct reaction to them banning Trump. I mean, I know like I've lost about 20% of the people that follow me. And that's a combination of people that are being purged and people leaving in response to the purge. But yeah. I don't know what any of these people are thinking. Like from an intel agency perspective, the great utility of all these social media engines, because they have a lot of CIA-backed support and other intel agency support, is the mass information they're able to gather. They are forcing the entire 75 million plus Americans, plus people around the world that are on this political side of the sort of populist liberty side of the aisle, to start using new technologies, figure out all the ways to use blockchain, figure out all the ways to use Bitcoin, figure out all the ways to not use Facebook, not use Twitter, not use Google. They're going to substantially damage their market brand, substantially damage their customer base, and hopefully they should substantially damage their stock value. Their stock value doesn't go up. I'm mighty curious who's buying that stock.
Well, so some theories are going to be some other countries, some other investors, the same ones who own Twitter. Well, the same ones who already have a big stake in Twitter. Yes. Interesting question. We entered a contract with Parler and Amazon is preventing us from accessing the contract. Can you have tortious interference?
You should, but there's two issues. There's Section 230 can apply in crazy ways in this context. The second, I looked at all of this for Jones, and it's tough to bring legal actions right now against any tech deplatforming of any kind. And so that's the problem. That's the hurdle. So I'm still in favor. I mean, apparently Trump team is going to bring suit on the grounds that this was actually state action because the senator from West Virginia asked Twitter to do so, and the incoming vice president asked Twitter to do so. So the question is, were they actually doing something in conformity to those directions? Now, some people have asked, how is it that if you are a public forum, that President Trump can't block people on his account, but Twitter can block everybody?
Well, they
don't consider Twitter a state actor. Trump, when he's blocking someone, is a state actor. When Twitter does it, not a state actor. I don't agree with a lot of these decisions, but it's where the law is currently.
And I brought this chat up, and a lot of people were saying, very funny, they were saying, raising that argument. Trump cannot block, but Twitter can. But it was always the case, yes. Whether you agreed with it or disagreed with it. They were not saying that they're a state actor. It was that the state actor cannot block, but we're a private company, and we can block a state actor if we want.
The old civil rights laws, I brought some of these claims, do prohibit private actors from acting in collusion or in conspiracy with state actors to violate civil rights. So that's where I think now the Trump campaign still is an uphill battle. They're probably going to be, and it's, again, it comes to the forum and the forum place you're at. And that's probably a good transition into Dominion Sidney Powell suit, because it's often who decides is often the biggest question in any lawsuit.
Well, let's just, we'll get the spoiler alert out of the way, DC court or DC jurisdiction. But for those of you who don't know,
she should move to transfer that venue to Texas right now. Right out of the gate. Don't take the bait of moving to dismiss. Don't take the bait of seeking discovery right away. Move to transfer that case to Texas, because she does not want Dominion's not located in D.C. Sidney Powell ain't located in D.C. I get some statements occurred in D.C., but Dominion, to my knowledge, has zero contracts in D.C. So under venue transfer rules in the federal, and because they brought it in federal system, not state court, in federal court, they allow you to transfer to another federal court somewhere else in the country when that other federal court has more connections to the case.
Who decides that transfer of jurisdiction? Is it the DC court, or would it be the court to which you're petitioning to go?
It's the DC court. So that's always a problem. But also I would be politically, just with the same advice I gave Roger Stone, said I would be, and he didn't, unfortunately didn't take it, and Trump bailed him out. But I said I would be contaminating that case from day one. I would be screaming political manipulation, seek every form of remedy. I would be making that case stink as bad as possible so that any judge thinks I don't want to be near this, and get it to a proper form. She actually has a shot with a Texas judge and a Texas jury. She has no shot with a DC judge and a DC jury.
And so let's go over some of the allegations in the lawsuit, because it's a very damning lawsuit. It's very well drafted. It's well drafted. It takes
shots. Warned about a month ago. What I warned her people about longer than that ago.
And I like it. Like, nobody can take that. Nobody can undo what was said, because these are things I'm reading this lawsuit. It's like, yep, Robert mentioned this. We were talking. It's not to make you feel good. I
said that she was getting set up, and I don't like Dominion. And part of our future efforts, you know, we'll get into this later, but, you know, people are saying, what action can we take? There's a lot of action that can be taken. Democratic constitutional conforming action that can reinvigorate the constitutional democracy. That has, in fact, been the long history when rogue government actors have cracked down. What has soon come thereafter in America has been populist liberty-oriented reform of a major category, because the people don't take kindly to this kind of nonsense. And part of that is going to be investigating everything connected to Dominion, documenting every problem it has. So anytime it seeks a contract from any state, making sure those state actors know to also take away any damages claims they have against Powell. Well, I was very critical of what Powell was doing and said this was going to happen. It's clear Dominion's doing it for politically motivated reasons, and Dominion is far from a perfectly clean actor in this or any election.
So, and the bulk of the allegations, I mean, I have a problem when people go after lawyers for deficiencies in their pleadings. Some deficiencies are understandable, some are inexcusable, but you still go on. The issue here is that Sidney Powell, I suspect Lynn Wood is down the pipeline, is being sued for defamation in that some of the mistakes were unforgivable and were then the basis for defamatory statements, such as typos. When they mentioned 158% turnout and 178% turnout in Michigan, where it was a typo and it was actually 50.8% and 71%, that they made statements based on a mistake of the state, Missouri versus Michigan. So those are mistakes that you could forgive, but not when you've made public statements, massive public statements on the basis of those factually incorrect statements. And again, this is not a blanket defense of anybody. This is just the allegations in the lawsuit, which they're going to have to answer. The ones I have the biggest, the ones that seem to be the most damning, are the affidavits of the experts, and one of whom turns out did not have any military or intelligence experience, whereas apparently they said he did, but who's now saying, they drafted my affidavit for me. I wanted to backtrack a little bit, walk things back, and they drafted it for me and said, sign it. And they basically put the words in my mouth, and those words were incorrect and defamatory. That's one of the aspects. I mean, what do you make of that particular element?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually exactly what we talked about and what I predicted was going to happen. I said, when you go to QAnon, and that's your sources of information, and these people are feeding you ridiculous affidavits with claims that you should know on their face, not probably true. What's going to happen is they're going to turn around and claim they didn't draft that affidavit. You did. And then they're going to accuse you of suborning perjury. I've been around these bad faith actors for a long time because I've represented a lot of political outsiders. And we represent political outsiders. You get a lot of people that come from different eclectic mindsets. And some are really insightful, and some are Linsanity level nuts. And some are fraudsters. Some are grifters. And she was getting all of them. And I kept trying to warn her and try to warn people around her, and they just would not listen. And they were just seeing those, you know, everybody's following me, and I'm on all these news stations, and I'm a hero, and I'm famous. Like, no, they're leading you right off that cliff.
And for any, this will be a practical lawyer advice in as much as I can ever give. When you draft affidavits, even though, you know, you compile the information that a client or a witness gives you, you put it into an affidavit, you phrase it, you give it to them, you cover your butt on each and every single front where you say, this is your statement, it is not mine, in as much as I've put things together, it has to be 100% factually correct. If it's not, you tell me, and if you sign it, you have it all in paper. And barring that, and even then you can sort of assume that when the poop hits the fan, the witness or the party or someone's going to throw you under the bus when everybody starts coming for everybody. And if you haven't protected yourself, you're going to be exposed. And
I mean, it's true, like, especially expert affidavits and other things. I remember one of the first things I learned from a great plaintiff's lawyer. He went nuts at some expert who emailed him. And he understood the old lesson from Earl Long. You know, never in writing, always in cash. And what he explained was he yelled him at the phone. He's like, we're going to have all conversations about this on the phone. Everything else is discoverable, et cetera. And then you're going to draft the expert report. You're going to write it. You're going to send it to me, and you're going to put it in sworn form. And any issues we have with clarity of any questions, we're going to handle on the phone. Again, Sidney Powell does not do much civil litigation. Lynn Wood has done just defamation cases of a particular kind. He's not considered a high-end civil litigator in the legal world. He just isn't. He never was. They were not well equipped to handle this. It's the reason why, I mean, I was involved in deep at the president's request early on in Georgia, several weeks was there on my own dime, my own time, and continued to help out behind the scenes on other matters. But as soon as Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood came in, I said, I'm not helping on this. I said, I'm not going to be involved with this. I said, they're totally wrong. They're leading you down a wrong path. All they're going to do is damage the cause. All they're going to do is damage themselves. And that, you know, if I have final say, or if somebody I trust, Cleta Mitchell, fantastic lawyer, other ones have final say, but not these guys. They don't know what they're doing. And people didn't want to listen.
And also to give everybody the biggest benefit of the doubt, if you are a small firm, this is why class action lawsuits don't want to go to people who've never done them before, because it's immensely intense work. And if you can't handle it and you've never done it before, you're going to be so over your head that unless you can admit it, you're going to end up with ethical complaints. And so let's just even assume that these are all good faith mistakes. They were just overwhelmed with filing 7 to 10 different lawsuits in different states, too many witnesses, getting confused. You don't have the infrastructure. You don't have the team. Not being able to do your job properly is itself an ethical violation. And assuming, you know, files that you cannot faithfully and properly and competently carry out is a problem. And so when you're dealing with this, and like you mentioned it earlier, but it's coming back, you know, Dominion might be sitting there saying, these people are overwhelmed. They can't deal with this. They're confused. They're getting misinformation. Let them make their beds. Let them make all the mistakes in the world, and we're going to pounce on each and every one of them. And in that lawsuit, they sure as heck do.
And they have easily provable ones. You know, she's, you know, claims that Dominion was foreign owned, false. Claims that Dominion owned Smartmatic, false. Claims that Dominion was involved in the Venezuelan election, false. Claims that Dominion sent information overseas related to the election and election server votes, false. Claims that Dominion servers were seized in Germany, false. She has a bunch of easily provable, or Dominion does, a bunch of easily provable, factually false statements that they can show a reasonably diligent person would have figured out. So, I mean, they have her dead to rights on a bunch of claims. So, I mean, I said a month ago, she's being set up to be bankrupted. And by the way, defamation, bankruptcy is not a protection from defamation. You can't even bankrupt your way out of it in the United States. So she's bust. And then they'll disbar her based on the outcome of the civil suit. So they managed to take a hero fighting the deep state and get her to self-discredit herself and self-implode while taking the president's election challenges out with it in the court of public opinion.
And so, they mentioned a lot of the public statements, which have thus far proven to be totally unsubstantiated or at the very least totally contradicted. One of the most
to that super chat question. They ain't coming after Barris. I represent Richard and anything. Richard didn't say anything false. Richard was telling people the machines is not where to look from day one because of his own analysis. And good luck trying to come at, you know, Sidney Powell, I guess, is going to be defended by Wood. I think by now she should know that's a bad idea. But I don't know what her resources are. They're not coming after Barris or Brainerd. They took a few pot shots in some court filings, but that's it. Not at Barris, though. They're not that dumb.
Good. And now I just want to get to one of the other factual elements so that people are aware of it. One of the things they really banged on the table on, or banged on the fact, was that two of the alleged statements from alleged whistleblowers or alleged witnesses were drafted identically. And they were either separated temporally or separated geographically. But two of the critical witnesses drafted verbatim identical statements of what they saw, which can lead a reasonable person to conclude that these statements were in fact prepared, not by the witnesses who didn't know each other and were in different countries, but by a team which then drafted and said, go sign them. And that's how you get, that's when a lawyer becomes a player and not an advocate. And that's.
Yeah. And now she does have some potential because she hadn't sued Dominion itself. And because some of those claims were raised in court, she will be raising the litigation privilege. And the question is the scope and scale of that. So the litigation privilege is that a lawyer or a person in aid of litigation makes certain statements, that those statements are generally privileged under certain laws from defamation claims. So the and so she may have that defense available to her. But the question will be the scope and the scale, because she said it in so many forums and so many formats outside of an independent and separate from the litigation. That, and again, it's going to be a decision maker. She needs a favorable jury and a favorable judge, or at least one that's not overtly hostile. DC is not that place. If she stays stuck in DC, she's going to lose, and lose badly, unfortunately, is the likely outcome.
What is Giuliani's exposure in the long run?
Substantial, but he said far less statements, and he made a lot of those statements in the immediate context of litigation or presentations to the state legislatures, which can also, within certain contexts, come within the litigation privilege. So he has been sued by the Dominion CEO in Colorado, or not CEO, the CTO, I think it was, Chief Technical Officer. The CEO is also talking about bringing suit against different people. They're saying they could sue Trump. Well, not under the Trump, while he was president, can't be sued, nor after the fact. He can be sued for things he said before he was president, but defamation, at least, is not supposed to. I mean, it's going to be an interesting contrast and conflict. There's some courts that have said he could be sued. We'll see. That will relate, of course, to my Covington case suit, but that's focused on Congress. Members of Congress are supposed to have less immunity from defamation than executive officials. So we'll see how that works. But I don't think they have viable claims against the president currently. He also said far less. Most of his statements were generic and vague. He only got caught up in one or two statements they can make hay out of. Nothing like what Powell have unfortunately said. I mean, again, she kept going further and further and further. You know, Chinese involvement, Iranian involvement, Lebanese involvement, Venezuelan involvement, Cuban involvement. None of this will end up being borne out, or that she'll be able to prove. And now they do have to prove, because Dominion's a public entity, they do have to prove that the, and they're suing defending the Republic. So my guess is they're looking for lists. They're looking for whoever contributed to her and so forth too. I also have my suspicions about Dominion giving the timing. They could have made this more clear way back at the beginning. May not have made a difference, but the fact that they didn't allowed things to get developed in such a way that, but what, remember what we talked about, that they can sue for real economic damages to their public reputation, ability to get future contracts. And I'm sure they are going to have a problem getting future contracts. And that's how it's a $1.3 billion claim. And because you can't bankrupt out of defamation, what that means is that Powell, you know, depending on what state you're in, you can, in Texas, you can keep your home from a civil suit. But most places, you know, it's like minimum wage is all you're allowed to keep. Everything else they're able to take, depending on the case. And if she isn't protected in advance from an asset protection perspective, that's one of the things I'm recommending everybody. Time to get a backup plan in terms of technology, backup plan in terms of your assets, backup plan in terms of residencies and citizenships and physical location. Be ready to walk out on anything you need to in 15 seconds flat if you feel the heat around the corner, to quote the great movie Heat. And it's only when he forgets and goes back that he gets into trouble. So I think that's our second cinematic reference. Some other ones, if you want to watch them, looking at how QAnon has manipulated people's behavior, trying to understand it, both Manchurian candidates are probably useful to watch. So the first one is much better. Parallax View with Warren Beatty, probably pretty good film to watch these days. And Arlington Road with Jeff Bridges, probably a pretty good movie to watch these days. And how do you get people to do things against their own will or knowledge that hurt and harm the cause or person they care about? And so the they took Wood on a ride, and they took Powell on a ride, and now both have managed to two lawyers that were seen as effective anti-establishment lawyers are now self-discredited on the track to disbarment and bankruptcy, unfortunately.
All right. That's it. I mean, we're gonna follow the Dominion lawsuit. It's fantastic. I mean, for everybody who's saying there's going to be discoveries, it's part of the strategy.
And I'm sure she'll try. She'll get some stuff, but again, it depends on what court she's in. If she's in front of that DC court, they're probably going to limit. Like, here's the thing: some people think, hey, if I lie about somebody and get them to sue me, I get to discover everything about their life. No. That's not how that works. It's got to be what you knew and what you had reason to know. And if truth is your defense, you have certain limited areas where you can go in and do discovery. It's not just broad scale, wholesale, anything and everything, every communication, every email, every text. unlike what Lynn Wood was saying. That was a cue, by the way, that Wood really hasn't fully litigated a lot of defamation cases. He sues for big amounts, gets big attention, gets a much smaller settlement typically, and then the case goes away. The few cases it goes to trial, like the one he took against Elon Musk, which looked to be an open and shut, he completely lost. So some of his insights on defamation were not very insightful, in my view. So there's limits on what you can discover in discovery. There's some information you can get. There's a fair amount you can get. And if that was her goal, she'll get more discovery than she would have otherwise been able to. What happens when she can't prove it? That'll make it even look worse. And my guess is 90% of what she thinks she's going to be able to prove, she's not going to be able to prove.
Oh, sorry, I'm on mute. And reading the lawsuit, look, they make some good points, but the lawsuit also reads like a promotional pamphlet for Dominion. How good they are, what they were trying to, you know, find solutions for disabled people to vote. There's a tremendous amount of self-serving stuff, as there is in every lawsuit, but there's factual elements that you cannot ignore. You can't walk back on, and you have to deal with. And it goes back to like the first time I heard Sidney Powell talk. It's like, I detect confidence, but I need to see this before I make any statements. And then, you know, we're today and we're where we are.
Yeah. And again, remember they had an opportunity to retract some stuff and it was, all right, let's go. It's fat. That's almost never a good idea. I'm like, even if you want to fight, you respond with a detailed letter that says, here's why I think I'm right. Please show me where I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll retract. I'll correct. She did none of that. And several, you know, stations, you know, other places are vulnerable. So, you know, some people have taken themselves out of the game effectively by making some mistakes in this. But that doesn't change the equation. It just changes which generals are on the battlefield. It ain't going to change that the battlefield's still going to exist in the political world and that you can use constitutional legal remedies for your defense and so forth.
Okay, and this might be the good one for the last topic. We need to finish at a hard 2 hours for a number of reasons, one of which is so I can make sure to get this up on Rumble ASAP, but also because obligations. And first things first, 12,768. Everyone, go hit the thumbs up so we can see it go from like 4,700 to like 7,000 in 1 second. The little thingy thing there, if you don't mind. Thank you. Okay, I just pulled up a comment that said Barnes is depressing tonight. Barnes is, and this is my experience, and I've known you, Robert, now for a lot. It's been a long time. You're neither depressing. I find you more optimistic and uplifting than depressing, but you are realistic and informative. So
take Donald Trump's approach, art of the deal. Always hope for the best, and there's plenty of reasons to hope for the best, but always plan for the worst. And then you're not like Parler and you don't get behind the eight ball. So, you know, find every way to have secure technology and secure means of communicating and following those that you want to follow and be informed with and be connected to. Viva Barnes. That's why we created the Locals Board. VivaBarnesLaw.locals.com. You can go there. You don't have to be a paying subscriber. You can just be a board member. About 80% of the information on the board is free. I'm going to be giving daily updates on there moving forward. I'm going to be doing book reviews and movie reviews and other things. But you look at American history, look at world history, we have every reason to be optimistic. Be pessimistic about what's coming in the short term, but be optimistic about our human capacity to resist it. As the great statement goes, there's two schools of learning, the state and the church can never close, and those are the rights of man through your conscience and the archives of nature that we can all use our cognitive capacities to understand truth. And they still can't close them. And just like Nelson Mandela said, you can stick me in prison, but I'm the captain of my own fate. I am the master of my own soul. I may have got that quote wrong, but it sounds something like that.
Well, and now people are, I don't want to say they're pessimistic, but people accuse, whenever I, you know, reiterate something along that lines in a variation, people say, I won't, you know, they call me a Canadian. They call me, enjoy the boot on your neck, et cetera, et cetera. And I say, I think I'm making a difference in a practical way, in a realistic way that I can sustain, that I can do. There's certain things I just can't do. And there's certain things that would be counterproductive to do. So I thought it in my way, but now.
Exactly. The two things the bad actors in the system want people to do is to feel such futility that they either lash out and do something stupid and violent that's self-destructive of everything they care about, or to make the mistake of, you know, I can't change anything. And so I'm just going to quit and forfeit and go home. And the reality is that ordinary people collectively have the power. The system only succeeds if people forget the power that they have. The moment they forget their power that they have, then the system prevails. Now, I mean, I remember I was a young kid in D.C. I was thinking, one person can't make a difference. It's a sucker's bet. It's irrational. But the reality is the only way the system changes is enough people believe they can make a difference. And that's how it happens. And we have a long, I mean, if you're in 1918 and you had Palmer raids and sedition laws and Eugene V. Debs going to prison because of a speech he gave, you could say, man, life sucks right about now. Within a few years later, not only did we have an economic boom, but all those laws were scrapped from the books and considered wrong and abhorrent to be part of. So the same with the Sedition Acts of 1798. Same with a long litany of bad actions our government has been complicit in taking and the powers that be complicit in taking. People have a way of collectively responding. And as long as they keep the faith in the constitutional republic, then the constitutional republic will not only live, but it will come back stronger than it was ever before.
Amazing. And now, aren't locals vulnerable as much as Parler, Apple, Amazon, etc.? No, right?
No, they have multiple backups, multiple independent. They have different kinds of contracts. They have multiple backups. So they are nowhere near as vulnerable. They've been set up in anticipation of big tech censorship. Dave Rubin started this many years ago, and he put together a team to limit their any risk. And they're in the process of continuing to build to try to use blockchain and other technology to make them as immune as possible. The irony is this big tech onslaught was too quick, too aggressive. It's a sign of how scared the system is. I mean, that gives you an idea. The system wouldn't have to do what they were doing unless they are scared of your power. So the system thinks you're very powerful. That's why they're reacting with insane over-the-top actions, like mass purges, like let's criminalize the president. Like, let's put all the supporters in a form of big tech gulag. That's the sign of weakness. That ain't the sign of strength. Locals has been built to do this, and other places. Rumble has been built to try to survive this as best as possible. And they're continuing to use new technologies. And the new part of the revolution is going to be Bitcoin and blockchain driven. That is as independent and separate from the system's ability to control and shut down as is humanly practicable or conceivable. And if we have to go back to ham radios and old delivered mail, well, we can do that too. The human spirit has a way of conquering the worst of oppressors.
And I'm trying to think, we have time for one more topic before we end this. Which one I'm looking? Oh, people were asking about the no-fly lists, and I'm not sure I know. Yeah.
They are back. So people were there just at the rally have been put on the no-fly list without notice. So there's ACLU litigated this for many years in the terrorism context because that's when they first started up with this no-fly nonsense. I've always been opposed to it. And they're supposed to be due process in place because it's like anything else. You're a United States citizen before any right can be deprived of you. And there is a constitutional right to travel within the Constitution. It's where the fact that states cannot require you to register to vote less than 30 days before election day, that's the 30 day cap that they can do more than 30 days before they can't require. Why? Because the Supreme Court said you have a right to travel as part of the protections under the U.S. Constitution. So their ability to, and then there's due process rights involved. So, and they've been trying to circumvent that. And there are a couple of bad decisions out there on the no-fly list. No, we're definitely going to be challenging and contesting that. The Free America Law Center that I helped started, there's a wide range of it. We're going to be going at the lockdown lawsuits. We'll be debating Dershowitz Tuesday on the forced vaccines. Number one, number two, we'll be going at election law reform. I think a lot of election law reform that can pass that can minimize this ever happening again. And third, all of these other restrictions, whether that are coming from the new domestic terrorism laws, the new Patriot Act on steroids, whether it's the no-fly provisions, not being able to get library card access. I'm going to be bringing a major claim soon against a major bank that was politically discriminating against an investor. So a guy who made the bank millions, tens of millions of dollars, who helped invest in inner city areas and helped revitalize them with extraordinary success, where the primary beneficiary were inner city neighborhoods and communities. And they politically discriminated against him just because they knew he was a Trump supporter in violation of the good faith clause. And I'm trying to come up with ways, both in the employment context, in the access to education context, access to airlines, access to travel, all of it, to be able to establish ways we can get legal remedy. In some cases, we may need new legislation passed in new states. In other cases, there is law on the books. One theory I'm pursuing is that these are violations of public policy. Certain firings in violation of public policy are actionable under U.S. various state laws. In addition, in some states, they actually prohibit political discrimination, such as California and some other places. Many of these companies are California connected. In other places, there's other laws that prohibit the manner that say, for example, if you have a contract, you have to operate in good faith. My theory is that if you target someone for political discrimination, that's not acting in good faith. So I'm looking at every legal theory and strategy out there to help architect a legal onslaught in defense of constitutional liberty against the repressions that have happened and are coming.
Amazing. All right. And we're going to end it with this one. Alan Shara says, Robert, where can one start to learn about Bitcoin? So many scams out there. And Robert, as far as you know about Bitcoin, are we too late or where does it go?
No, it's probably still going to go up. You look at Bitcoin, if you buy it at any point within 2 years, I believe since its founding, you will have never lost money over time. In other words, even when it takes a drop within 2 years, it will be higher than when you bought it. Extraordinary in that way. And the things that are driving it are going to keep driving it. Even JP Morgan and some others were talking about it reaching 100,000. So the other reason to have Bitcoin though, isn't necessarily as an investment. But as I'm going to be on George Gammon's show later this week, probably on Friday, as he's advocated all the way through. The reasons why you have things like gold and Bitcoin is for your security and liberty, to make sure you always have access to some form or means of barterable exchange somewhere in the world, such that if the bank shuts down your access, you still have access to means. It's just a good self-protection plan and a self-empowerment plan. And I was going through, I think we covered all of the top questions that were asked on Locals.
I think we did good at the very least. We got to a bunch of them, but these are universal questions that anybody living in the current times are asking questions about. One more question. I guess we have 2 minutes. You're following the Soho Karen Maya Ponsetto story?
I thought your analysis was very good. And I do discredit. I understand maybe that guy was wanting his son to know you don't have to give in to whenever someone makes a demand of you. And because he saw it through a racialized filter, I saw some people say compare what happened to Capitol Hill to BLM and say that if it was BLM rioters, they would have all been shot. Well, that's not what the last 6 months showed us. So, putting that aside. But I still found, I think your fundamental analysis was correct. It's someone that clearly was suffering an emotional breakdown connected to her phone. So, and all you have to do is show the back of your phone. This was the point to make not only that, here's my problem with him. If he was really making this brave, bold point to teach his son a good, valuable lesson, well, he taught him a bad lesson, which is if someone's acting crazy, you go along to try to calm down the crazy because you don't know where that's going to escalate. Well,
this is something I didn't say in the video, but like she tackles him. She could have had a knife just as easily. And the kid gets stabbed over a stupid phone. And now, wait, we've made a point. And even if it were, maybe I'm a bit of a pushover. The one anecdote I didn't mention in that video, I left my house one day in a fluffy down jacket, ran out of the front door, didn't lock the door because I didn't have to. And a cop stopped me, a police security stopped me right outside my front door and said, what are you doing? And I said, I live here. And I maybe didn't look like the person that would live there. And he says, do you have any ID? He's like, yeah, I could have fought till I'm blue in the face. I could have, had there been any other aspect of identity politics at play, could have jumped to that conclusion. But avoid the conflict. And with this case, you're dealing with someone who's clearly on the edge, who may do more than just tackle you, and then good, you're right, but you're stabbed type thing. It's like
it's the same problem I have with how the Capitol Police handled everything is de-escalate. Don't increase escalation, de-escalate. Now, in their defense, I think they were given a lot of bad intel and bad information. But there's ways to they're supposed to be trained in de-escalation. But there goes the second thing, my problem with how he behaved. If his real motivation was to protect his kid, why is he filming the whole thing? So, and at what point are you trying to take advantage and mock someone who's mentally imbalanced? Yeah, I just don't, or someone's having an episode, whatever the reason. I just found that that's not being nice. That's not being a civil human being. That's not being a decent person. So I did not find his conduct. It was entirely lawful, but not the most appropriate conduct. And I thought he gave a bad example to his son.
And now, would you represent Maya Ponsetto if the opportunity arose?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I'll represent any, especially we got to handle situations like that differently. You can't accelerate and just physically tackle people because you think they stole your stuff. I mean, I think that's a bad idea to encourage and incentivize. At the same time, we can't overreact every 5 seconds. and arrest everyone, imprison everybody over any civil disagreement. So there has to be some balance between those two. In her case, they probably could have just chosen a probation violation charge because of the prior alcohol related incident and just deal with it that way. The systems are contradictory. You know, one minute they want all these Trump supporters to be locked up forever. The same people are saying we should, are part of a de-incarceration movement. Well, which is it? Some clarity and consistency would be nice. But I don't like treating things that have clear evidence of a mental health discordant breakdown as something that has to be criminally punished all the time. Because it won't have a deterrent effect. Someone who's experiencing that episode is not thinking in a perfectly rational way.
There was nothing going to calm her down, and all he had to do
was flash the back of his phone. I mean, come on, you know, quit being an uncivil jerk and want to be a hero for it. That was my take on his father.
Maybe the
kid was just trying to stay out of all of it. He's like, my dad's saying this, got this lady saying that. You know, he was like, I'm just going to walk outside. That turned out to be an unfortunate mistake for him, too. But his dad was the one who escalated unnecessarily, in my view.
And it's not because she's a petite female that she's not potentially lethal. I mean, people should appreciate that. It's in life. You don't know who.
Yeah. Always. Old lesson. Never mess with someone who has a higher threshold of violence than you do. And if you don't know what their threshold of violence is, by golly, you better back out.
Well, and I say anyone who makes those suppositions never watched UFC because you never know who will destroy you in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
C. Lu Hu says he asked us a question on locals. We didn't get to it. Post it again to locals. We're sorry. There's a lot. We do our best. Just want to let you know that. Robert, this was amazing. Everyone, keep the faith regardless. Do not succumb to compromising your own integrity out of a reaction to someone else's improper behavior or injustice. I mean, that's the only thing. It doesn't make you a pushover. Pick the battles properly and wage them properly so that you actually further your interests instead of compromising them.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no great hero story that doesn't have a major point of crisis and a major villain to oppose. So the fact that we have some villainy on the rise and a major crisis that we're confronting just presents an opportunity for all of us to act in a heroic fashion. And we still can, and preserve the constitutional republic that our forefathers birthed us and gave us.
All right. And on that note, everyone, enjoy the rest of the weekend. I'm going to enjoy the next 8 hours at home because I can't go anywhere. I can walk my dog. I'm going to take her for a long one. But enjoy the rest of the weekend, everyone. We'll see you throughout the weekend next week.
We'll see you Tuesday.
Oh, my goodness. Tuesday, debate with Dershowitz. It's going to be good. And we'll answer all of your questions, I suspect, on HIPAA violations, face mask vaccinations. Tune in, 7 o'clock Tuesday. Have a good weekend. Robert, we'll say our proper goodbyes. Peace out.